since I can remember. I hate you, and I wish you both had cancer.
Cancer?
Yes, in the head.
I'm tired as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Pay no attention to that man behind the curtain.
Are you telling me you built a time machine? Out of a DeLorean?
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Hello there, children.
Hey, hey, kids.
People seem to like me because I am polite and I'm rarely late.
And now, the host of the Stupid Cancer Show, Annie Goodman and Matthew Zach.
Woohoo!
Not that there's anything wrong with them.
Because he has a lot of chip stuff.
All right.
Monday, March 17th. And welcome to the Stupid Cancer Show, the voice of young adult cancer. I'm your co-host, Matthew Zachary, a proud 18-year young adult survivor of brain cancer.
And I'm your co-host, Annie Goodman, journalist and young adult breast cancer survivor, and we're your host for the Stupid Cancer Show.
Annie Goodman.
Annie Goodman. Okay, it's not okay that 72,000 young adults are diagnosed with cancer each and every year. So, got cancer under 40? Sucked, huh? Time to get busy living, folks, because the Stupid Cancer Show is changing the world one chemo infusion at a time.
I'm Kenny Kane, co-founder of Stupid Cancer, welcoming all of our first-time and returning listeners here on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, iHeartRadio Talk, or listening to the archives on stupidcancershow.org.
It is our 300th episode of the Stupid Cancer Show. Yes, who knew on May 28, 2007, we'd be here today celebrating all of our inglorious glory.
Who knows what we're celebrating.
All right, we have a great show tonight. We have Kiku Collins and David Gibson, live musician, survivor, couple of the greatest non-David Hasselhoff international touring debut on the radio show.
Apocalypse.
Extravaganza, yes, incorporated.
Live in studio. We love live in studio. And we'll be featuring Patrick Dempsey's brand new cancer documentary, The Peloton Project, with director Ramsey Tripp and co-producer Laura Davis.
And I am Maureen Sweet, manager of programs and operations here at Stupid Cancer, and I will be live tweeting throughout the broadcast at ChemoDeck. So send me your questions and feedback at any time with the hashtag SCRadio.
All righty. 300 episodes. What did we do for 250?
Did we throw a party?
I think we threw a party. Well, we had Irish party.
Same thing we're doing tonight.
We pre-gamed.
Yeah.
Happy St. Patrick's Day
in
advance.
Party.
Yes, exactly.
Bah humbug.
What?
I said bah humbug.
That's because we're Jews?
And I can't drink.
Aaron go brah humbug.
Yeah. Very nice. Very nice. God, May 28th, 2007.
You were just a boy.
I had a hair.
Not yet a woman. A
little more hair.
Yeah.
40 more pounds, a little more hair. Yeah, exactly. From my house. What do I say, in my basement, in pajamas?
Yes.
I wasn't really in pajamas, and it wasn't really my basement. But it was an empty bedroom in a house in Bay Ridge with no board, no money, no staff, no nothing.
12 years of volunteer.
Exactly. 12 years of volunteer, exactly. No, I'm really, really excited. This is a big milestone. We should be proud. This is as cool as hitting 100,000 likes on Facebook. It's a really big deal.
Yeah.
Big milestone.
Big
milestone.
To
be here.
Yeah. Well, first and foremost, I'm noticing someone here in studio tonight that hasn't been here in quite a while, and we couldn't be happier to have her back here tonight, the lovely and talented Annie Goodman.
Thank you.
Welcome back.
Welcome
back.
Trying to
find your underground bunker with Dick Cheney.
I escaped.
You escaped your undisclosed location.
Yes. I was trying to think. I think it's been 3 months.
It's been a while.
Yeah. So last, I think I was about to go to Houston to go to MD Anderson. I think, and then when I came back was when I started feeling really sick. like immediately that night I came back, I started feeling really, really sick. And
Texas
then,
has that influence on some people.
Yeah, it does.
The whole state.
Usually it happens to me in Austin on 6th Street.
Yeah, well, Houston is, I think I would just die of boredom. So I, before, prior to that, I had just had a hysterectomy and they couldn't figure out what was wrong with me. And it turned out.
You had brain tumors like me.
Well, that was figured out later.
Okay.
When I was, like, getting confused and couldn't see and all kinds of funny things like that. So I went to Houston. Then, you know, they basically told me, you know, we're pretty sure you have metastatic breast cancer, blah, blah. But you look okay. But let's do a chest scan just in case. And I did a chest scan. And there was, like, all kinds of cancer off of my lungs. And I was like, this sucks. Then,
just this sucks.
Yeah. Then it was, I think the reaction was a little stronger than that, but... Then I was starting to look into clinical trials and then was working that route because I had triple negative breast cancer. I have BRCA1. There's a lot of drugs out there like PARP inhibitors that are very successful for people like me. So that was where I was at. And then over the weekend, before I was supposed to meet with the doctor about seeing the clinical trials, I had been feeling very sick leading up to that. And everyone kept saying, it's menopause. You know, you're depressed, blah, blah. And then I got lost in my brother's building, and that was weird and scary. And it turned out that was a seizure.
Oh, boy.
So, yeah, because they say you have these, like, focal seizures where you could, like, lose your – I was losing my peripheral vision. That was a form of a seizure. And then also getting lost in common places is also a form of a seizure. So that was happening and that was weird. And everyone's like, well, you're just stressed out and overwhelmed. I was like, you shouldn't be stressed out and overwhelmed. I don't get lost in my brother's building and not know where to go. So then 2 days later, I completely lost my peripheral vision, my left-hand side. And that was when I ended up called my doctor and they were like, go to the emergency room right now. We're calling, we're ordering your test. And I told my friends, I was like, I know what's going to happen. I either have a brain tumor or I had a stroke. I was like, one of the two is going to end up with me in the hospital for several days. So being the professional patient that I am, packed a bag for end up in the hospital for 8 days, I had to get more crap. But I said, let's just throw some underwear in a bag. I was with my boyfriend and my friends. And I said, I need to pack a bag and take a lot of Xanax because I know what's about to happen. And found out I had 6 brain tumors. And I was admitted to the ICU, which was interesting because one of my roommates, before I was able to get into the neuro ICU, had a flesh wound. So every time they changed his dressing, it smelled like dying flesh. Mm. And I nicknamed that roommate Smelling Cat.
Isn't that a new, like, candle scent?
It should be for someone you hate.
I like Yankee Candle.
It should be.
Burnt hair, isn't that the other? That's
yeah.
The
burnt hair and dying.
Yeah.
Yes.
So.
Smell of intestine.
Well, that was on the other. I was in a quad. The guy next to me had, the other guy on the other side had advanced colon cancer.
Mm.
So I felt really bad. So I didn't complain about him, but I did complain about the flesh wound and said, I will give you guys my credit card. Get me a private room right now. Like, you're in the ICU. There are no private rooms in the ICU. You just have to wait until the neuro ICU has a discharge and you can get in. I was like, well, I'm supposed to get better in the hospital, and you're making me worse because this guy stinks, and I need a constant, what's it called? Like, stream of Zofran.
They're like, he's from Long Island.
Like, we know. I was like, I normally don't throw tantrums, so I nicknamed him Smelly Cat. And they finally got me out of there and I was in their ICU for a few days. And then I had brain surgery and it took out 3 brain tumors. And then I had some chemo after that. And then I had brain radiation and then more chemo. And I'm having gamma knife surgery next week.
Mm. Wow.
So my brain MRI was actually really, really good. I had a really, really good response. I had so much going on in there. It was tough to knock it all out with just the treatment I had. So my doctors are very pleased. So even though my first reaction was to have a heart attack, was why did I have gamma knife scheduled for next week? What is in there? And they said just a tiny bit of residual. So they said, let's just...
Well, that's the best news ever.
Yeah, it could have been better. But you know what? Like, it's good for now. And hopefully this will keep it away for a while. Because usually once you have... metastatic brain tumors. They tend to come back, but I'm going to have brain MRIs like every other week.
Brains are overrated, trust me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to have MRIs all the time, so I'll just have more Gamma Knife as we go along.
So speaking of rotting flesh, Maureen was in the half marathon.
Yep. My knees are no more. No. Yeah.
And you must have passed by and been passed by lots of very interestingly smelling individuals.
You know, my biggest fear, I was public about this, was I was really scared I was going to poop my pants because apparently that happens during long races. And I'm like, what if it happens to me? But like, people do that during like half marathons. You just like lose control of your body. It's like when you die. And yeah. So I did not, but I was, and no one around me seemed to. So that was nice.
Good thing you have Shepherd's Pie and Guinness before the race.
But you did finish 2 hours 53 minutes.
2 hours 23 minutes and 53 seconds.
Very nice. I was close. I had the numbers in there.
Yeah, yeah. So I was pretty proud of that. I've never done a half marathon before, so it seemed like a decent time. Yeah. And I finished it, so that was really nice.
I think the pants pooping is usually the people who are trying to win and don't want to stop. Because I remember I watched the New York City marathon, and the woman who was in the lead just like puked on herself on camera and had to cut away really quick because it was disgusting. And they're like, and she just threw up. I mean, she didn't even slow down. She was like vomiting like mid sprint.
Yeah,
it's because they're trying to win.
I mean, I think
those are the people.
It's $20,000.
Yeah.
So I'm like, well, if I can get down from like an 11-minute mile to a 5-minute mile, it's not that bad.
It's only 11,000.
20,000, I think.
Oh, 20,000.
A little more. It's the half. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's not as important.
Half the winnings.
Yeah, true.
I played the New York City Marathon one year, and where they had a station must have been a point in the race where many people had to relieve themselves because there was some bushes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, God.
Yeah, I saw a lot of squatters behind the bushes.
Usually,
you should see the lines or the porta potties.
Those are
awful.
Different kinds of squatters.
That's like an extra 10 minutes of your race just waiting if you want to use one of the restrooms.
Usually, the popular spot to use the bathroom at her is the 59th Street Bridge.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Because no one cares about Queens.
Yeah. Nobody's there.
Because it's dead.
Yeah.
Because it's very empty. So there's a lot of piers on that bridge.
Nice.
Anyway.
Well, we're glad to have you here tonight.
Thank you.
We hope you're able to come back more and more.
I hope
and
so, too.
Your returning champion status here.
Thank you.
In the chair that we've kept so warm for you.
Yes.
Very nice.
I'm feeling like a human again.
Good. Good. And you're looking like a human.
Thank you.
That's even better. All right, cool. Well, again, we have our phenomenal in-studio guest tonight. I will give you a formal introduction.
Ooh.
You know the music?
We're throwing some at home.
Yes. Elmore Leonard. All right. Keke Collins is a well-traveled performer, navigating the music scene via her play on both the trumpet and the flugelhorn. A survivor of breast cancer as a young adult who only recently fell in love with all that is stupid cancer, I am envious as a fellow musician and performer that she has been invited to perform with Beyonce, Michael Bolton, Gloria Gaynor, among others, and when she's not lending her talents to others, she and her fabulous beau, David Gibson, have their own band, they release their own albums, and they're doing amazing things promoting the young adult movement and making everyone feel completely and entirely talentless. Please welcome Keke and David. How's that for the best intro ever?
Well, we can go now.
Yeah. Good night, everyone. I am really, really thrilled to finally get you guys on the show tonight.
This is fun.
From the minute that we first met you all those months and months ago,
yeah.
Maureen has done nothing but talk about you, and there's a secret shrine we haven't showed you yet.
Ooh, yep. You need some hair?
Yeah. And that'd be great, a blood sample.
Any of that.
We have some homemade candles.
Oh, great.
It's actually made out of butter.
Yeah, the shrine, nice.
Right.
Not Bobby Rahal?
No. Right, exactly. No, they're too young for that.
I know.
Yeah, you can't make these references with
the
20-something in the room.
I don't know what that means at all.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm 32 and I don't know what that means.
Bobby Rahal butter sculpture that was on David Letterman probably 20 years ago.
Yeah. That was back when he did like Velcro Man.
Yeah, exactly.
In the 80s. Yeah,
that was when Chris Elliott was on the show all the time.
Oh, God, Chris Elliott. Cabin Boy, right?
The Man Under the Seats.
Cabin Boy.
Monkey Cam. That was
you would know Chris Elliott as Woogie from Something About Mary. He was,
yeah,
that's the
right.
most relevant thing that he's done recently.
Woogie.
Yeah,
Cabin
yeah.
Boy
sounds
pretty good.
Yeah, exactly.
I used to call my mom Woogie when she got a rash.
Oh, my God.
I don't Call Her Woogie.
That's a
nice. I haven't seen that movie.
Very nice. Very nice. In any case, I'm glad you're here on the show. I would love you to regale our listeners with your story as a young adult with breast cancer, how music got into your life, and I love the fact that you've now fired two doctors.
Yay!
And I want you to talk about that because having those kinds of balls are what people literally need to understand that they have the potential to do,
mm-hmm.
and that no one is the boss of you. So why don't you start with the let's say the 6 months before you were diagnosed, what was your life like?
Well, we had just gotten married.
Actually, we were planning our wedding 6 months.
Yeah, we were.
Yeah, and then we had a
it was low budget.
It was,
okay.
Yeah,
it was
handcrafted.
Fancy.
Was it during the half marathon?
No, and nobody pooped in their pants at the wedding,
well,
that we know
one,
of.
One person did
oh,
throw up
someone
on
did
themselves,
throw up
though.
On themselves. That's
yeah.
another. Yeah.
I'm
yeah.
sure that was alcohol-related.
That's, yeah, that's the sign of any good wedding.
That wasn't a marathon
yeah.
during
yeah.
the extra.
Yeah. They really wanted to win. They really wanted to win that alcohol.
Nice. Very nice.
So, yeah, so we were planning our wedding.
We got married in July.
Right. Yep. What year?
2012.
What year was that?
12. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm glad you both don't remember.
You know what? This is how well-connected we
yeah.
are. It doesn't even matter what
we
year.
We were laughing
yeah,
about
right.
this last night. We had
yeah,
a friend over, and it seems like we've been together forever. It,
yeah.
It hasn't actually been forever, but,
no.
yeah. No, it's been a nice ride.
It's been very good.
Yeah.
So did you feel a lump? Did you have a pain? What?
I have always had lumps.
Okay.
I'm a very lumpy girl.
Got it.
And there's a lot
family history.
Yeah,
too.
There's a huge family history. So I've been getting checked since I was, you know, in my mid-20s. And, you know, I mean, every year it was the same thing. Oh, we need to do another scan, you know. And it's like, oh, it's nothing.
And because,
right.
because you were lumpy, I believe the normal mammogram was never.
They always
the
did
trick.
A sonogram right
okay.
in.
They always do a
like
sonogram.
They would roll me right in, like, okay,
yeah.
next. So I was actually.
After we got married.
It was after?
Yeah, it was shortly after she
yeah.
said, yeah, you have to go.
Right, because I was about to head out of town for 5 weeks to do a show, and I was going to live. Well, I did. I lived
yeah.
out in the Hamptons for 5 weeks doing this play.
Right.
And so I think, I guess I went to the doctor a few weeks before this gig started. I was like, yeah, no, I'm a little late for my checkup, blah, 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 and everything was cool. And then, she, you know, she does a little exam that doctors do where they just are basically feeling you up. And, you know, she's going over the usual suspects. And she's like, well, let's see, you haven't had a mammogram in 14 months. I said,
mm-hmm.
yeah, no, I'm a little late. I'll get it when I'm done with this gig. She was like, I'd prefer you went sooner. So, of course,
uh-oh.
I'm like, you know,
yeah.
oh, my God, I'm going to die.
Oh, no.
You know, I mean,
yeah.
that's the first thing you think. And so I went in, I guess it was a couple of days later. And, you know, and they always have the same reaction. Oh, yeah, you have this every year, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
But I went to the gig, right?
Yeah, there was something different. She was staying out in Sag Harbor, and the
very
way the gig worked, she was rehearsing 6 days a week. Or working 6 days a
yeah.
week. There was rehearsals
was
and then
like
when the performance,
yeah, yeah.
the performance.
Mm-hmm.
So every week she would get to come home after the last
day.
Show on Sunday, she could come home and she would take a bus home and then we would get Monday together and
the
then
Hampton
she would have
jitney.
To head. Yeah,
exactly.
the Hampton
the
jitney.
Jitney.
One out.
The jitney.
You know what's up, man.
You know, Kat,
I think I saw you on the Hampton Jitney. Yeah, you ate your
I had
your
the straw hat over my face.
You ate all your Utz products.
Nice.
So no, but so she was coming back like one day a week, and so every week there was a new test
It was
scheduled.
A new freaking doctor. I'm thinking, ooh, Mondays. Like, I'm working 6 days like crazy.
Right.
I get one day to go home, hang out, see my family, you know, do little things. No.
And it's musical chairs with the doctor.
Oh,
yeah.
God.
Well,
every...
we just had to get different tests every week. So the first time you went and you got your mammogram and sonogram.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then the next time, then you went and got the biopsy. That was
that
the one that was really
horrible.
Scary. But we celebrated afterwards with a greasy burger and some fries.
It was, but
well
it was
indulge.
Organic and gluten-free.
Oh, it was, yeah. It was delicious.
You're meeting something halfway.
You know what I'm saying? There was a beer involved.
That's generally, yeah, that's generally what
Wait,
we
so was there, like, the phone call at some point?
Yeah.
Yes.
You already know.
He was in Brazil.
How dare you?
He was in Brazil.
I was in
so
Brazil.
So the tests keep getting deeper and deeper every week. He's out of the country. So it's not like I can call him
So I'm going, yeah, okay, let's Skype, blah, blah, blah. Every time I get him on the Skype,
yeah,
he's in the hotel lobby, and there's the entire band that I know. Hey, how you doing? And they're all, like, poking their heads in and waving. I'm like, oh, my God, I have to tell my husband that I think I'm going to die next week. And everyone keeps popping into this freaking screen, and I can't say anything.
Right, all right.
So that was really difficult.
Yeah.
What did they actually say? What did they the long
well, they didn't say I was going to die the next
week. Did the biopsy come back, like, something? Or?
Yeah.
Well, they immediately wanted to get you in with a breast surgeon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the worst part was when they did the biopsy, they were like, oh, it's usually nothing. Don't worry about it. In fact, if there's something there, well, it'll probably all come out. I'm like, what?
What?
How? Okay. And, oh, yes, I also practically passed out.
Yeah, you did pass out, yeah.
Literally, you know, they wedge you in this thing, and so you're like this,
is
right?
Is this a core biopsy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you're, like, in the worst position ever. You think your spine is going to snap, and they're like, don't move. And you're saying, okay, I don't know how I would move. And there's a humongous needle through your breast.
Right.
And then there's this horrible sucking noise. Like, I can't even
Can
mock
you describe
it.
A positive sucking noise? That's not where I was going, but
of course it is where you're going.
Hold on, what family show?
Exactly.
So, yeah, so they've got me in this horrible position, and then I turn white as a ghost. I am freezing cold and sweating at the same time. And, of course, the nurse looks at me and she goes, are you okay? I'm like, no, I'm not okay.
All good over here.
Yeah. Right.
Actually, that nurse came out and
she was
told
very
me
sweet. She
that she's the
me.
One that told me to go take you for a burger.
Yeah.
She
tried to give me one of those ghetto cookies.
Oh, God.
And I was like,
the
I
morning
eat
again?
A
cracker?
Oh, yeah, yeah. It was just this horrible thing. And
horrible
I was,
thing.
It was just
yeah.
this big, horrible, nasty
I know
thing.
That
it was like non-bread.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
How many characters do they have in the label for that?
Yeah.
That horrible non-cookie.
I think if I don't have cancer, I'm going to get it from this cookie.
Oh, God.
I can't eat this. So, but, I mean, she was very nice, and she walked me out to him and says, your wife requested a burger. You need to go now. And she actually called me a few days later to see how I was doing.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah.
All right. So they tell you, do they say it's cancer? Do they say it's suspicious? Did they say?
They said it was cancer.
Yeah. The next call I got.
Yeah. Yeah, that was when you were in rehearsals for you were in. Yeah, you were
in the gym.
Okay. Well, had you finished this Hampton project yet?
I was out there.
It was 4 weeks.
I was
in
at
fact,
the gym in the Hampton.
That was her birthday. It was around Labor Day.
Yeah.
And
oh, boy.
So when she got the call, I immediately, I was working that weekend. And so I subbed out my gig that weekend, and I hopped on the Hampton Jitney. Brought
to
you
find your
by
wife?
Hampton right. Jitney.
With his us.
Yeah.
Right, to find your wife at the bougie gym.
Yeah, exactly.
But wait, the phone call went something like this.
Yeah,
the handsome Jitney left.
Yeah.
And he was like, oh, God.
I was like, I'm going to go out there. I'm coming out to see you. I'm coming out right now.
Like, don't,
just play your gig. It doesn't matter. I was like,
no.
Wait, did you collect her Bourne style and suck her back to Manhattan for treatment or something?
No. I went.
I had gigs.
She was working. She was working out there the whole time. It was a great play, actually. It was really an enjoyable. I'm glad she had that during that time because it was. Because
my outfit was low cut, so I got to show my.
Yeah, she got the girl.
The girls got to hang out for one last.
Got it. Yeah,
okay.
You chartered a private Hampton Jitney.
Yeah, I did. And then I got out there and I like got skeevy with my wife.
What?
Well. So anyway, yeah, but we did. No, she was out there, and then that weekend they were doing all these parties. Was that the last weekend of the show?
Yeah,
okay.
We were done.
So that was the last weekend of the show. So an actress named Lilias White was starring in this show, and so that night when I got there, Lilias was having a big get together at her house where she was living in Sag Harbor. And so she's, like, making chicken wings and doing all this stuff, and we're sitting around. And that was right after – I think that was right after the one of the political conventions.
Oh.
And so we're sitting at the table, and, of course, everyone's, like, getting into it about Mitt Romney's speech and, you know. And, like, we're sitting at the table, and Kiku is just like,
Incapable of anything functional.
Yeah. And I actually – I'm allergic to mosquito bites, and I didn't realize that I had gotten about 40 bites while I was sitting there, completely could not move. Yeah. It was completely numb.
That was an interesting weekend, but I'm glad we went to that party. And then there was another party at the tail end of the weekend, and it involved a lot of grilled flesh, which, you know, to return to the previous reference. But it was seasoned. It was seasoned.
That was nice of them, at least.
Yeah, they did season it.
Oh, I want to cut away to the fact that you guys are musicians. Mm-hmm. You've always been musicians, trained professional. You're gigging. You're out there.
Yeah.
And you have a new album.
Well,
it is the newest.
Would you
got the newest album.
So we have a track to cut to, but I would love you to take a minute or two to talk about how you met, how music brought you together, how music has been shaped by your diagnosis. Try to keep it clean. Try to keep it rated at least just R, maybe not X. And then set
us out in post. Say whatever.
Right, and set us up for this track.
Well,
what
you seem like you had a lot to say.
Oh, she wants me to go there. All right. So we met. We had a mutual friend. And it was a mutual friend in the music business. And I only know my relationship with him. I don't know Kiku's. Yeah, well, anyway.
It was purely professional.
he used to talk about Kiku a lot. And he would mention her. And he would say, I'm surprised you guys don't know each other. You seem to have so much in common. You both have daughters. You both have some similar experiences. So time comes one year, I'm at this convention. It's a trumpet convention, but I'm performing with a trumpet player at the convention. Kiku is also performing at the convention, and both of us kind of spill out into the hotel, lobby at the same time from our conference rooms. And I see her, and I think, oh, I should say hello to her. Wow, she's really fine. So she's surrounded by a group of people who are asking her about Beyonce's toothpaste. And
I have that problem.
Yeah, you dig? So I'm hanging out, and I'm thinking, well, all right, I'll hang out for a minute just to say hello. We both know Steve, blah, blah, and I hung out for a little while, and it just got to the point where it was a little stalkerish. So I took off, and I went home, and I did a little scan for her on Facebook, and I found her, and I sent her a message, and I said, just wanted to say I was going to say hello today because, we both know Steve and I was at the thing. And she writes me back and she goes, what the hell were they doing letting a trombone player in a trumpet convention? And I thought, oh, yeah, spunky. Okay.
Right.
And
low standards.
Right.
Yeah, so anyway, that was it. That was it. That was the extent of our communication. Mm-hmm.
And
then
it was love at first.
No. It was actually 2 years of not having any contact at all.
Okay.
And then at the end of two years.
So like buyer's remorse and then coming back.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, it wasn't actually.
Like
I don't
window
think it was,
shopping. Kind
I don't
of.
Think we ever understood that it was a come on. I wasn't really coming on to you. No, I was just being polite. I really was. I'm being honest. I'm pretty polite. When it really comes down to it.
Because I don't know too many musicians that date musicians.
Yeah.
It's very atypical.
Yeah. I think mostly. It's not a, I mean, who's going to state the other person's ego? That's the hard part,
Yeah.
But anyway, so after 2 years, I kind of got a picture of her through her updates and the things that she would post because she would show up on my feed. And she was consistently positive and curious, used good grammar and spelling. Woo-hoo! And, all kinds of things that I find really sexy. And but mostly her philosophies were aspirational and positive. And so she said something that I connected with, and I wrote her a letter, and I said, I think you help people. I think your thoughts are really good for people, and I appreciate what you put out there. And then that was when the real dialogue started.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's play a few minutes of this track. It's called Blue Patrol. Can you just
me to stop talking now?
I want you to stop talking because
we haven't even gotten to their first date yet.
Yeah, I know.
Come on, man.
All right, I'm gonna commit an entire show.
I put my rep out there.
It's like, tell us about the first time you poked her on Facebook.
Yes.
Well, I mean, we have a finite amount of time.
Right.
You do.
But I do want to cut away to this clip of the song Blue Patrol. So set it up for us.
Blue Patrol. Well,
Kiku wrote it.
with my drummer.
Jay-Z performs in one of the verses.
You know what, he remixed it later.
Daft Punk on Triangle.
Right.
We had to
yeah, but we cut that.
Yeah.
It was no good.
We had to take that out.
Terrible.
Too much.
Yeah. In the extended version.
It's
okay.
Yeah, so Blue Patrol was Kiku's tune.
It's badass.
Yeah. And I think I played on it. I played on it after, shortly after we met.
You'll notice that there are valve trombones. That's me.
No, nobody.
But then when it came to an actual trombone solo, I was like, ooh, yeah. How about this guy that I'm dating? He can play it. So he did.
Very nice.
I won't tell you how she compensated me.
Okay. Well, on that note, here's Blue Patrol. Speaks for itself. That's very impressive.
Fun, right?
Well, we can talk after the show because we can do overtime like Bill Maher does, except we're not Bill Maher on HBO. But in any case, we want to keep talking to you, but we got to go to our second segment. However, to close us out, happy ending, right? You are well. You are.
Okay.
You just fired your second doctor. You're off to Moxifen.
You bought $10,000 worth of stupid cancer merchandise.
Yeah.
Using Bill Me Later.
Right. I swear I'm good for it.
You have a child who's well and happy that mom is doing great.
She's so happy that I'm off the tamoxifen.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's my biggest... She's my cheerleader.
So you're currently shopping for a new doctor.
We have
college.
A new doctor we're going to see.
Well, we're going to meet a new doctor and see how that goes.
Right. Well, that's like the old story. Chris Carr used to say that you are CEO of Save My Ass Incorporated, and your doctor was an employee.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right.
Yes.
Or a consultant.
Yes, a consultant, exactly.
Yeah, they're not our boss.
Yeah.
Right.
I always say a hospital is not a prison.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You're entitled to leave when you want to leave.
Right.
Exactly.
See you, suckers.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's
I like
great
it.
Line.
Although when I was in the ICU, they would not let me leave to go to the Knicks game.
Oh,
that's horrible.
Rude.
That's horrible.
I know.
Yeah, well, did you really want to go to the Knicks game?
That's
the other
insane.
They actually did win that night.
Oh, goodness.
It's okay.
Wow, that never will
be others.
This is a show about young adult cancer. You are not an old lady with
Woo-hoo!
Breast cancer. Andy is not an old lady with breast cancer.
Nope.
I was not an old man with brain cancer.
Nope.
This is about who we
are. You might be an old woman with breast cancer.
I might be an old woman with breast cancer. That's kind of the problem.
Got to get that check.
I know. What do they call it? Pre-trans or something? I don't know.
What?
Hey, man, we live in Chelsea.
Yeah, true.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now, hey, Facebook added 50 new lifestyle choices, right? It's cool now.
Wow.
Well, men can get breast cancer. It's not like a transvestite thing.
I have a friend who has it.
Archer
yeah.
had breast cancer.
Archer had breast cancer, too.
Yeah. Like Archer, the TV show guy?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Who was that? Wasn't that the Scott Bakula?
No.
The cartoon dude.
Archer. Oh, okay.
No, you're thinking of...
you gotta check it out.
Was that Sam?
Whatever.
Iggy says.
Oh, God. Oh,
right, baby. We have really taken a quantum leap right now.
Oh, that's terrible. It's terrible.
Yeah, I like how they don't even know what the hell we're talking
about.
They're like,
people are laughing.
Quantum Leap was like the greatest sci-fi series throughout the entire 90s.
Ever.
Entire 90s.
Yeah, we used to watch that in my dorm. Yeah.
Leaping.
Okay, I watched it during recovery on Netflix.
Okay, even better.
Yeah.
All right, well, I'm thrilled. We're going to talk to you after the show, but this has been one of the more enlightening, exciting, invigorating, spicy, in-studio guest interviews
Come
we've
back
ever
next
had.
Week. Yes.
So, all right, so now it is time for us to hit up the news, but Kiku Collins, David Gibson, thank you for joining us. And now it's time for the news.
Hello, I'm Kent Brockman, and this is Eye on Cancer.
Just the facts, ma'am.
All right, head on over to events.stupidcancer.org. That is events.stupidcancer.org. Your one-stop shop calendar for all of our social and educational events nationwide. Something could be happening in your neck of the woods, and we certainly don't want you missing out. Matthew, we have some stuff coming up in Durham, North Carolina, New York, Cupertino, California, Renton, Washington, Rochelle Park, New Jersey, St. Paul, Minnesota, and Lakewood, Colorado.
Okay, Vegas time, folks. Registration for the 7th annual OMG Cancer Summit for young adults is in full force. Join hundreds of your fellow young adult patients, survivors, and caregivers for an epic 3.5-day event that will change your life forever. It does us.
Epic.
Visit OMG2014.org and learn more about the Players Club, which is your path to a $600 travel scholarship just by fundraising. OMG2014.org.
All right, I think our first guest would agree with me. It's always time to stock up on your stupid cancer gear. We've got all new products and styles to choose from. You'll stay nice and warm in a stupid cancer hoodie. Surf on over to stupidcancerstore.org and be proud, wear stupid cancer.
And another reminder that we're launching a mobile health app called Instapeer this spring. It's going to revolutionize cancer support. It is the first platform of its kind that will do automatic peer matching for cancer patients and caregivers, and it's incredibly exciting. We encourage you to go to facebook.com/Instapeer, instapeer.org, or follow at Instapeer on Twitter. Watch the video and be part of history, and that is your...
Stupid Cancer News.
Okay. This has been a show I've been very excited about. We've done a lot of research. We've been speaking to these folks for quite a while. And anything that has to do with Patrick Dempsey sets the heart afire of our VP of Programs, Allie Ward. I would like to introduce to the show, Laura Davis is the president of Rink Advertising in Maine, the co-producer of the Peloton Project, the voice behind I Hate Cancer Facebook page on a 25-year cancer survivor. She's joined us with by Ramsey Tripp, the owner of Trademark Art Productions in Lewiston, Maine, and the director and co-producer of the Peloton Project documentary film. Please welcome to the show to discuss this amazing project, Labor of Love, with Patrick Dempsey, who's not on the show, but here in spirit, Laura Davis and Ramsey Tripp. How you doing?
Welcome.
Hey, how are you?
Thanks, Patrick.
Thanks for having
us.
No, we're really excited to finally get you guys on the show to talk about the project. It's very inspiring and something we really care very deeply about.
Oh, thank you. We do, too.
I hope so. You produced it.
Yes.
Well, I watched it this morning. It was very inspiring. It was very interesting. I really did enjoy it. One of my questions was how you guys got hooked up or how the organization, the Dempsey Project, got hooked up with the organization Cancer Vive in Alberta, Canada, to kind of get this whole thing started.
Yeah, I can take that question. So basically, Ramsey and I have been doing work with the Dempsey Challenge and the Dempsey Center for many years, and with Patrick Dempsey, and every year we have produced, you know, short films, 5-minute, 15-minute films that center around some of the cancer stories that we've found at the challenge. So a few years ago, we set up this big tent at the finish line, and it was called the Behind the Bib tent. And as people were finishing the Dempsey Challenge, we were taking them right off you know, the finish line and saying, tell us your story. Why are you here? Because our theory was everyone who did that challenge was, whether it was the, you know, the 5K walk or the 100-mile bike ride, that there was a reason. And we pulled this guy into our tent off the 50-mile bike ride. His name was Brian McGregor. And he told us that he was from Calgary. And he was there at the challenge sort of scoping us out to see if he wanted to bring a whole group of riders from Calgary, Canada, you know, Alberta, all the way to Lewiston, Maine. He's a prostate cancer survivor. And he had spent, you know, several years going to Live Strong, and he really wanted to change it up. And so he was there. And, you know, within 5 minutes, Ramsey and I looked at each other, and we were like, oh, my God, if you're serious and you're really going to pedal from Calgary to Lewiston, we want to come with you. And so that's where the Peloton Project was born.
Very impressive. And I would look at, you know, the cycling world kind of, you know, had a hard time recovering from a public image perspective recently, but you guys are taking a very sort of hard stance on that. This is really about the spirit of surviving and the spirit of the cause and the movement and people. And I really commend you on taking that and owning that. So I was just hoping you could talk a little bit about, you know, what the end game is for the film. What is it you hope to accomplish? What's the message out there to the public, and how are you kind of differentiating this from other similar films?
For one thing, there aren't really a lot of films out there that kind of take on this epic journey, and it really shows a lot of the parallels between this epic cycle ride with what happens with people who are diagnosed with cancer. You know, there's ups, downs, good days, bad days, and so people watch it and they see that and they really experience what the cyclists experience. And so I think in a way it allows people to connect with a cancer diagnosis even if they haven't had cancer, or if they have a loved one that has, they kind of like get it. They understand like what's going on, what's taking place. So there's a lot of different levels to the film, so people come away with a lot of different perspectives, I guess, just because of all the different people that there are in the film.
I really enjoyed that there was a group of cancer survivors themselves, you know, and everyone there was kind of representing somebody. So why don't you explain a little bit about the ride and how, you know, how the people kind of all came together, and a little bit about the survivors as well, who told their stories, whether it be that they eventually made their way to Maine or that they did the ride themselves.
Sure. Ramsey, do you want to take that one?
Sure. So the ride was this crazy 2,500-mile ride from Calgary, Alberta, Canada, to Lewiston, Maine. And it was not just like that the mileage was crazy, but they were actually doing this ride in October. And so that was all across the south of Canada and the north of the United States, kind of weaving back and forth in between Canada and the United States. And they pedaled it the whole way. So they had six teams, and they would ride for 6 hours at a time, try to get about 100 miles a day in those 6 hours. And then they'd have to jump ahead and leapfrog so that the next time that they started, they were at the position that they needed to be at, so that when the team pulled into, you know, the rest stop or the hotel that they were staying at, they were all ready to go for their next 6 hours. And so they leapfrogged each team all across Canada and the United States. And, yeah, like you mentioned, they were riding for someone that they call the warrior, somebody who was either recently diagnosed with cancer or was a recent survivor. And so they took those people kind of on their back, on their cycles with them in spirit as they rode across the country riding for them. And it became very powerful for them, of course, and then most of the warriors, if they were able, were at the finish line ready to meet them on the last day of the ride. And so the warriors were all there cheering for them as they came across the finish line. That was a very powerful day, even for us as the filmmakers, pretty much no one that was there was without tears in their eyes. I mean, it was just a very powerful thing when the cyclists, because that last day they all came together as one big peloton with about 40 riders coming into Lewiston, and between Auburn and Lewiston there's this bridge, and all the warriors and a bunch of people from the cities were there to cheer them on, and they came across that bridge, and it was just like, bam, it just like hit you, like, this is crazy, excuse me. And, yeah, so it was very powerful when they came together, and just lots of hugs and lots of tears at that point.
How did you go about selecting the cyclists?
They were the people that just signed up. So through the Calgary-based Wellspring, they have this organization called CanSurvive, and CanSurvive is kind of the fundraising arm of Wellspring Calgary, and this was their big event that it does fundraising for that center so that they can keep all of their services free, so that people can come in and get Reiki and massage therapy and different things like that. So they use this as a fundraiser, and all the people that were connected were just real people. We didn't, like, select anyone. It was just the people that came that wanted to do this ride. And on the first day that they kind of signed up, we said, hey, by the way, if you're on this ride, we're going to film a documentary about it. So hopefully that's cool with you. And everybody, of course, was great. So.
And what we did do, though, is we did select warriors or cancer patients to also follow their journey, because we wanted to illustrate the fact that, you know, as these riders were going on this epic, crazy journey, the people that they were riding for were going on their own journey. So we focused in on three cancer patients. Two of them were from Calgary, Shay and Terry. And then Ramsey and I, when we started this project, we said, we really want to find a cancer patient here, you know, in the States where we have easy access. We can really, you know, film their treatment and, you know, film sort of a lot more of their story. And one of the surprising things about the film is that as we were in our, a little over a year ago in our fundraising phase of the film, we were doing a Kickstarter. And, you know, my college roommate, from BU was fundraising for us. And I was explaining to her one night, I said, you know, we really want to find a patient, you know, in Maine or New Hampshire. We can focus on their story. And she said to me, well, you know, I always told you I'd do anything for this film. And now I have to tell you, I've been diagnosed with cancer. So it was this really strange serendipitous moment for us where we were able to actually cast my best friend in this film. And, you know, Annie, if you saw the film this morning, then you saw the woman who so generously let us go in for her partial mastectomy, and she sort of let it all hang out, you know. As she said, she went topless for Patrick Dempsey. But she, you know, that, so that was very surprising. And I thought she did a wonderful job, and she was very brave to let us follow her, you know, through her treatments and through a really scary, you know, time for her.
Well, it's not easy to share your story when you're first starting out, and it's very unnavigated, and it's very confusing, and you have no idea what's going on, and you're just trying to figure your way out. I couldn't even fathom someone asked me, can we film this? I'd be like, no. only if the goal is to film somebody having a nervous breakdown. But
She does get to say that she starred in a movie with Patrick Dempsey and she was topless. So, that's sort of like, you know, it was worth it for her. But it was a great journey for us too. You know, I'm also a cancer survivor. And so it was, you know, it was powerful for me to watch her go through this and to just be so open about sharing her story. I'm with you. I don't know if I could have done that in that moment when so much is unknown. But she did a great job, and she really added so much to the film.
Yeah, she really did. And Ramsey, why don't you tell us a little bit more about Patrick Dempsey's involvement and what he thinks about the ride, since that's, you know, coming from a different organization, and bring that into his whole project.
Yeah. Well, Patrick's just a great guy to begin with. He's just very real, very genuine, loves Maine, loves to kind of support Maine as much as he can. And so in this process, Laura and I have been able to, you know, work with Patrick in the past for the Patrick Dempsey Center. We just had a relationship, and this was kind of in process of the film, I was like, I'd love to ask him about this. And so we put together the proposal and everything and shared it with him and some of his staff, and he was into it. He didn't, like, second-guess it. He was like, yeah, like, let's do it, you know, that kind of a thing. And so it was great. He was just really excited about the project from the beginning. And then as we were going through it, he was excited about the ride. He couldn't believe, like, the people in it. And when we finally premiered it in Lewiston, he came to the premiere, and, you know, we're kind of nervous, like, oh, what's Patrick going to think? You know, we hadn't been able to get him really any preliminary copies because it was such a rush to get it done. We had this one deadline that we were doing it for a film festival to premiere it at their film festival. So we just were, like, under the gun to just try to get it done for that. So he shows up on the night of the premiere, and Laura and I sat behind him just to kind of, like, watch his reaction and stuff. And so when it was over, he immediately called L.A. and was like, we need to screen this at United Talent Agency so that you guys can see it, and we need to get this film out there so people can see this film. So that was a good reaction. We were like, phew, that was awesome. So
right.
Now we're just you know, trying to see what the next steps are, looking at film festivals, and then hoping to have, you know, further connections to drive the film further and hopefully get it out there so that lots of people can see it and hopefully be impacted by it.
Laura, I was hoping you might be willing to share with us your cancer story and what has it meant to you to see the dawn of social media. You and I was diagnosed 18 years ago. You were 25 years ago. Very different time in the universe, per se, you know. And, you know, the dawn of social media has given us a brand new way to express ourselves and share our story and build community. So what were you diagnosed in the 80s?
I was diagnosed in 1989. I was 25. And I had just had a baby. She was 3 weeks old when I got really sick and, you know, eventually found out within a few weeks of being in the hospital that I had lymphoma. And you're right. I don't even know was the internet invented in 1989? I don't know if it was.
I think it was like AOL, but that's about it. Maybe Prodigy.
Al
Gore, yeah.
It was, right. There wasn't even an oncology social worker at the hospital where I was treated. There wasn't any way of connecting with other patients or survivors. It was really a vast desert. It was very scary. I remember my first year being so sick and finally meeting someone with my diagnosis. And he was, you know, a few years out from my diagnosis, and I remember it felt like being found in the desert and being handed a glass of water. It was like, sit down and tell me everything you know, and what can I expect, and how did you feel about this? And so, and it was a chance meeting, and the importance of that, you know, the importance of being able to connect. I think that social media has changed the landscape for cancer patients in the best way possible. The work that you guys are doing is just so critical. And a few years ago, I started my own little Facebook community. It's the I Hate Cancer page. And I really just started it to connect with some friends who were survivors. But it grew from there. And the unique thing about the I Hate Cancer page on Facebook is that only half of the people who are community members are from the U.S. The other half are largely from the Middle East, and especially Jordan and Egypt. And I don't really understand why. except that it reminds me that the experience is universal, and I think cancer is a really great equalizer. It doesn't really matter where you're from or, you know, what your gender is, or what your race is, or what your religion is. It's a very common experience, and we all, as people, we need to connect around that. So, it's very different in 89. I was very alone.
I will christen you. You may not be aware of this, but you are officially an alumni of Stupid Cancer, because
we now have
a bylaw in place that I just made up right now.
Very formal.
That so long as you were ever diagnosed under 40, a young adult cancer survivor forever shall you be, regardless of whether we were in existence at the time. That's the new button. To the alumni.
I appreciate that. Thank you. I really appreciate that.
Yes.
Well, you know, the funny thing about, or what I think about young adults facing cancer is this. Now that I'm 25 years out, I think when you're in your 20s and you're diagnosed with cancer, you have to face the second half of your life issues in the first half. So, you know, and you're thinking about all those things, your own mortality and all of that stuff. So in your second half of life, where I'm sort of headed, and I'm not quite there yet, but I'm headed there, that's when I intend to live in my 20s. So I feel like if I had to live in my 70s when I was, you know, just a 25-year-old, I'm going to make up for lost time. So thank you for initiating me into Stupid Cancer. I will make the most of it.
Yes, exactly. So I wanted you to talk, either one of you, like let's get the Ramsey back on here. Some of the writers were themselves young adult cancer survivors, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. There were a bunch of the writers had certainly been cancer survivors, and then there were a few that were young writers who kind of had out of the blue, you know, very healthy people, and then bam, we're hit with this cancer diagnosis. And so one of the guys that we really feature in the film, his name is Marshall, and he's just a great guy, kind of this, like, young, you know, hipster kind of guy into art and crazy music and all this kind of stuff. And just one day got out of the shower and was like, that doesn't look right, you know. And then through the process of going to doctors and stuff, found out he had testicular cancer, and kind of, you know, talking with a girlfriend and just different things that, you know, a young guy, you don't really necessarily think about that sort of thing. And, but he, you know, he had to deal with it, and it totally changed his life. And then he's like, he was kind of like working this one job. He's like, no, I just want to go back and do more art stuff, you know, like, why do I want to be stuck in an office all the time? And so that was one of the stories that was really interesting, was really cool about the trip. And there are other young people too. Laura and I really connected with one of the warriors who was a young mom, and her journey. And we, you know, we had kind of started interviewing her, thinking kind of one direction, and then as you do documentary films, it doesn't always turn out the way that you're thinking when you plan it, you know, when you start it out, especially with a cancer diagnosis. And partway through the filming, she was re-diagnosed, and it was looking really bad, but her name is Shay. She's an amazingly strong woman, and she's, you know, sticking it out there. She's doing great, and she's just a really powerful woman.
I also noticed when I was watching it earlier today that it wasn't just I think his name is Marshall, the guy who had testicular cancer when he was 25, but also a lot of the other people who were the warriors who were back home who eventually flew out to Maine were also young, on the younger side. Some one woman had very young children. A lot of them, some of the others appeared to be, you know, not your typical cancer patient. They definitely seem to be on the, you know, around 40, even younger. No one really stayed their age, but none of the people casted, I felt like, seemed old. Was that on purpose, or is that just kind of accidental? Because to me, it seems like, wow, there's a lot of, you know, really young adults in this film who have a form of cancer, and I thought that was really interesting and also helpful for the movement.
Yeah, we didn't, like Laura was saying, we didn't choose, per se, anyone except that we were looking for someone who had just been diagnosed, and then as it turned out, that was Claudette, who was Laura's best friend. But the other ones were just people that were already connected to the ride. They already, you know, were people that we were kind of following, and so we included them in the film for, you know, various reasons. Some of it was just kind of logistics because of where they lived and who they had connections with in the ride. And so that was the beginning of a lot of it. And for Shay, who is this young mom that you were talking about, we connected with her because she was a survivor, had done cycling, and had this, like, crazy family life, you know, and everything. And so we just really connected to her. And then as it turned out, she had wanted to be a rider, but then because of the diagnosis, she ended up being a warrior. And it just changed. And so then we started following her as a warrior. But, yeah, she is very young and has two little kids, and her husband, you know, same age, very young. And his perspective is well, Laura and I have this kind of thing. We're not necessarily maybe like the whole pink cancer kind of thing, you know. So her husband, you know, would talk very openly about what he thought about cancer, and we really did with that. We really liked his thoughts about, hey, you know, this sucks, and if Shay lives, that's great. If she dies, well, I got to go on with my life, you know, and he was just very matter-of-fact about life.
So right now the film is available for download at thepelotonfilm.com. Are you getting this into screenings or films or festivals? What's the plan for this, the distribution? Are you having public events? And I know you're obviously engaging the cancer community, because you're talking to us and we want to help you, but what's the larger goal for getting more people to know about it?
Go ahead, Laura.
We're getting the film into festivals. We are making the film available on our website. We're also, one of our missions is that we get this film into the hands of patients and survivors and care centers, so that you know, the overwhelming response from cancer patients and survivors has been that the film really resonates with them. So our mission is to provide that film. But I guess the short answer to the question is we're now in a cycle of getting it into films this year. We have gone out to Beverly Hills, and we've met with Patrick's team, and we've talked about lots of different distribution channels. I think that everybody wants to make sure that the film is seen in a variety of ways. But certainly your listeners can connect with us on thepelotonfilm.com or find us on Facebook, and, you know, we can make sure that anyone who wants that film can get it.
And right now we're doing a thing online that if you purchase the film, if you do the DVD version, then we're giving if you do the download version, we're giving a physical copy DVD to a cancer survivor who's been recently diagnosed, and we're doing that through the Dempsey Center and through Cancer Vive Wellspring in Calgary. So we're trying to get it out there just to people who have a connection, because you don't have to be a cyclist to get into the film. It's all about real people, characters, and people can just connect with that and hopefully enjoy the stories, feel inspired, and that's what we want. We want people that have just been diagnosed to realize, hey, you know, you can keep going, you can do more, you can you know, take another step, and that's what we want people to get from the film.
So I had a funny question. Maybe it's not funny. I have a kind of, no one finds me funny. Anyway,
he's going to say a couple of words.
I was going to say, I was going to ask you, like, what were some of the things you couldn't plan for at the film? Was some any surprises, like when you got to the customs at Buffalo with 40 bikes, did they go batshit crazy? What the hell is this?
Probably one of the biggest crazy things was the we had this RV that we had been donated to us so we could use it for the film, and it just kept breaking down. So that wasn't planned, and we had a great crew, a small crew of filmmakers, but a great crew of guys, and the truck just kept breaking down, and so at one point we almost got back. We were in Quebec, and the thing broke down. Actually, I guess we made it into Ontario. And so for the next 2 days, two of the guys, our guy who was shooting and our driver, we shot most of it off of a Can-Am Spyder, which is like a three-wheel motorcycle that looks like a snowmobile. And so they spent the next 2 days in October and in some rain and terrible weather just on the motorcycle without having like the support of the RV, because we just kind of left it in Ontario and moved forward so we could keep up with the cyclists. So that was certainly unexpected. We had not planned on, you know, doing a bunch of RV repairs all across Canada and the United States.
Yeah, I thought you were going to mention when the group of them got the stomach virus.
Yeah, that.
That's
that
what
was
I thought. I thought your unexpected thing was going to be. I was like, oh, it's totally going to be when there was a group of them all holed up in one van, vomiting and hiding from everybody else.
That was that was bad too. And what Ramsey won't tell you is he spent the first day really, really sick too. And actually, there was a doctor. There were a couple doctors on the trip, but one of them, Lisa, actually took care of Ramsey that first day when he was really sick. And then a few days later, she was the woman who had the accident. The cycling accident and actually was pretty severely injured. So that was not a pleasant surprise at all. That was really regrettable. And then, you know, I think the other surprise about the film is that, as Ramsey said earlier, when you're making a documentary film, anything can happen and you have to be ready for that. And so when you're centering it on the lives of people living with cancer, you know, sometimes things don't turn out the way you want them to or the way you would wish. And so one of our warriors was the first time we filmed her, Ramsey filmed her very last chemo treatment. And we really thought this is going to be a great story. She's going to have a great ending. We're going to be able to, you know, to show that you can come back from a cancer diagnosis, you can get treatment and, you know, be strong and be healthy. And, you know, the truth of the matter is that she was re-diagnosed during our year of filming and after the Dempsey Challenge, got very sick and actually died. And actually, you know, Ramsey went back out to Calgary to visit with her the day before she died. And so, you know, I think when you take on a project like this, I guess you have to be really open to really being on that path with people, you know, with patients, and be willing to walk that walk even when it's a really, really hard walk to walk. So one of the, I guess, things that will always stay with us is Terry.
Yeah. And some filmmakers, you know, they I think kind of remove themselves a lot, and that's just not my personality. Like, I connect with people, and so as I'm filming, you kind of, you know, there is a little bit of a tension there between that line of just kind of staying removed and distant and stuff and letting things happen, and then also just being relating to the people and connecting with them. And the people that were in the film, we just loved them, and I loved them. And immediately when I met Terry, I just loved her and her husband, and they were just great people. So, you know, so you're walking that journey with them, but they're not just, you know, people that are in a film. They're real people, and they're your friends, you know. And so the highs and the lows and the fun, I mean, we would laugh together, and we would actually cry together. So it's just a great experience to be able to do a film like this and connect with great people and hopefully get that that they're not there so other people can connect with them too and really enjoy who they are, because they're just real people and they were so open to us and we just had a great time with them.
Well, we can't thank you enough for stopping by the show tonight. We've been speaking with Laura Davis, co-producer, and Ramsey Tripp, the co-producer and director of the Peliton Project, produced by Patrick Dempsey. The website is thepelitonfilm.com. We wish you only success, and if you happen to be doing Tribeca Film in April, we'd love to see you when you're in town. Thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you, Matt.
Thank
and Andy.
You, guys.
Thank you.
All right. Good night.
Good night.
Good night. Thank you.
Well, I have a special treat for you two guys sitting over there, because I care about you so much. This is for you. Let's see if you can guess what it is. This is for David Gibson and Kiku Collins.
Biggie says you're supposed to kiss that guy.
This is the theme to Quantum Leap.
You're never going to get home.
Okay, I just had
that
to.
I'm too young for this.
Awesome. I had to pull it off.
I
had to pull
it
off.
Gene Stockwell imitation.
Oh, it was so
like
bad.
It was spot on. Yeah, I'm glad you checked it out. Yeah.
This is when I feel powerful for being 40.
Yeah. I don't have a cigar yet.
Well,
check out the show.
So yeah, and we got to look at the. I would love to, if you guys want to take out the. Check out that film. I mean, have you seen any cancer movies? Did you see 50/50, by the way? Like. I think that came out. You know what? You probably didn't, because it came up before you were diagnosed.
Mm.
Yeah.
We haven't seen much. We haven't seen much in that regard. But
I mean, you don't seem like pity party people, right? So what did
yeah,
you
we're
do?
Not good at that.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, like, when you engaged in the cancer community, were we the first group that you knew about, or were you, like, hit up by the American Cancer Society or Susan G. Komen and everything pink bullshit for months and months and months?
You guys were, like, the kick-ass people that we found.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
and then you
like,
got to know us.
Yeah, pamphlets. Oh, dearie, here, you should go and meet with this support group. And then, you know, you're like,
yeah,
well,
think,
is anybody
think...
like me?
Right.
No.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's about vitality, and it's about
yeah.
a commitment to enjoying your life.
I don't need to
life.
Cry.
Yeah.
I mean, I cried plenty. That
right.
good.
Yeah,
was,
you guys have a good
dumb.
Energy.
Yeah.
yeah,
we're not about to cry. I mean, we do cry, but
yeah.
we're not about...
Hey, listen, I cried at the thing that you guys did, was it in no
at OMG East?
At
yeah.
East?
Yeah,
we
yeah,
both cried.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Big sappy sats.
Yeah.
We are sappy. I mean,
we hope you come back too with that, by the way.
Me too.
I have a special invite for you after the show.
What did you cry at OMG East?
Oh my God.
What was the moment?
There were a lot of moments.
Well, it was
Hans,
yeah.
He
got me. He got me pretty good. But
Ooh.
the first cat too.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. I was sick and came halfway. I came after lunch.
No, that
he was incredible.
Yeah, he talked a lot about his experience with
mm-hmm.
his family.
Yeah.
And what his mom.
Yeah, I love his mom. Can his mom adopt me? Is she listening?
Are you serious?
He said his mom started growing. She goes, "Go get me some," and she was like, "Give me the seeds."
See now. I mean, I lost
I
my mom
that.
To cancer I when I was 18, so we never got to that point where she might have offered to grow me weed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right.
But I'd be curious to
well,
know.
Well, you would have grown her weed.
Right.
Yeah.
I would be curious to know if she would have done that.
People
right.
didn't know that back then, though.
No,
we
that's true. They didn't
that was
know
the
that.
80s.
Yeah.
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 Very cool.
Yeah, it was different back then.
So before we go, I wanted you to just tell us more about where you are in your music career now and... You know, did having this crazy cancer experience change the way you think, write, create,
yes.
engage? And because it did me.
Yeah.
I mean, physically it changed the way I played, but it just changed the way I think about creating music.
And tell us more about the compensation.
What?
Dribbling.
Yes.
Well.
It's humid.
I have to say that I was very busy the whole time. Like, when I got diagnosed, I was... living in freaking Long Island doing this play
mm-hmm.
in a low-cut dress and a wig and
It was all crazy.
You had a big schedule after that, too.
And I had a very big schedule. Right. We came back home. I'm talking to these doctors, and I'm freaking out because I'm thinking I'm about to die. And I'm saying, but I have all these gigs.
Yeah, you had like a month worth of gigs.
Yeah, I went to Brazil. Right.
Yeah, with Gloria.
I went to Brazil.
And came back.
And then I did two television shows.
Oh, right.
And I was flipping out. And I was like, oh, my God, I don't want to sub out these gigs because you know how this business is and they'll like to sub better. And
Dr. Mills was cool. Dr.
He
Mills
was so cool.
Surgeon. He just
oh,
said,
my God.
He says, You do the gigs. We'll schedule the surgery afterwards. And,
right.
You're not a ticking time bomb here.
So I literally, like, went to Brazil, came back, was...
You went to D.C.?
No, D.C. was after. I went, I did a week with BET.
Oh, right.
And was filmed that. And then I went to D.C. and played at the Kennedy Center for Ellen DeGeneres. And then, like, 2 days later, they were... hacking my breast off. And
yeah.
I was like, oh, all right.
That was a crazy time, though. But that, you know what? As much as we've been frustrated with the oncologists, all the surgeons and the radiation oncologists.
My surgeons are so amazing.
Right.
I mean, Dr. Mills called you the night before.
He did.
I don't know. Does anybody else
Is
have that
the guy
experience?
You fired or a different guy?
No,
okay.
Yeah. Breast
okay,
good. He's like Wilford Brimley.
Yeah.
Ah.
He's great.
He's just like...
I have diabetes.
Right. He gets his meds in the mail or something.
He sent us some Quaker Oats.
Right.
No,
he's great.
Go ahead.
On the topic of doctors, I remember when I was admitted to the hospital, I emailed like my other doctors who weren't going to be immediately involved. And the next morning, I'm like hanging in the hospital, and someone walks in, and she goes, "I'm here from gynecology." And I was like, "I had my total hysterectomy like 6 weeks ago." She goes, "I know, but I emailed." She's like, "You emailed Dr. Blank. What was going on? She feels terrible. She can't come see you, but she wanted us to come check on you during their rounds and to tell you, I gave her a stupid cancer sweatshirt and to tell you that she was wearing the sweatshirt I gave her all day. And then I was literally being rolled into my brain surgery and she like detoured and found me to say good luck right before I went into the room.
Yeah, that's nice.
So she would come visit me like all the time. I had like all my doctors came in who, they don't work in the hospital. They came in
to
come see me.
Well,
yeah.
Yeah. That's, you know, also Dr. Mills.
You should come to my doctor.
It was during Hurricane Sandy was the week immediately following her surgery.
Yeah, I had like drains hanging out.
Yeah, I was in treatment too during Sandy.
So Dr. Mills gave us his cell phone number, and we were he couldn't come in. The power was down, so we were talking on the cell phone every day.
Tell me how you doing.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then we got this.
We have to like bottle these doctors that have personalities
right.
and figure
Can we
out.
These people?
Yeah.
Do you know this book, Cancer Vixen? Because somebody.
Yeah, that's Marissa Marchetto.
She,
I love her. She's a good friend of mine.
And we were looking through the book, and Kiku was like, "Honey, is this?"
That looks like Dr. Mills.
It was him. So I took a picture and texted it to him.
She's an amazing person. That book made big waves when it came out a couple
I
of years ago.
It. My daughter was reading it the other night. She flipped it out of the shelf. She was like, "Oh yeah, let me look at this again."
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah.
She's an amazing person.
Yeah.
Very cool.
No, it's been. I mean, it's been. And I've been busy. I was busy in between. I was busy during my radiation. I mean, the last day of my radiation treatment, I had a recording session.
Oh yeah.
This was 6 weeks. I was like a burn victim.
Yeah.
And so nobody knew.
It's a good thing you can play like violin, having this thing and pressing on your chest.
Oh my
right?
God, I was in so much pain. Yeah, it's true though.
It probably hurt to have
it
to project.
Awful.
Yeah.
It was awful. But
here's
knew.
My wife. Here's my wife. The surgeons are like, "Yeah, you can't play for this amount of time. You can't do this. You can't do this." And it was just like, yeah. As soon as she could get out of bed, she was on the couch like with the trumpet
like,
playing.
Like propped up with pillows, like long tones.
I got to tell you, that was the best for me too. I'd be back, and once I could hear her practicing again, it felt like her home again.
Yeah.
It was,
all right. Final question.
Yep.
Arturo Sandoval,
mm-hmm.
God or demon?
I love him.
Yeah.
I love him. The first time I actually met him face to face, we were at some trumpet convention thing, and I saw him, and I was like, oh, my God. And, you know, I have all these different sponsors.
He was trying to talk to you.
All these different sponsors. So
yeah.
I was with Chop Saver, which is my lip schmutz sponsor.
Right.
And I'm like, go introduce me to Arturo. You know, and so Dan, of course, is like, hey, Arturo. You know, because, you know, Arturo also uses Chop Saver. So.
Not the same tube, though.
Yeah, we have our own
right,
tube.
Okay.
Thank you. So, and he was so sweet. He goes, oh, my God. He goes, so are you here performing? Or I was like, no, I'm just with my, you know, with my horn company that they sponsor me. She goes, he was like, show me what horn you play. And he, like, grabbed my hand and we're, like, running down the hall. it was hysterical.
Awesome.
I think people were talking about
the highest note ever played in musical history. Arturo Sandoval.
He also plays piano, though. And
yeah.
And he loves
pretty
to
much.
Sing.
Yeah.
He really likes to sing.
He was one of my heroes.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, we are out of time, but I'm really excited we got to have you guys in the studio to talk about your story. The amazing Kiku Collins and David Gibson, you guys get a special applause. You get the
don't don't but don't.
Where is it? Why is it not playing?
We actually use that quite often.
Is that right?
I don't know why the applause isn't working, but okay. Let's see if this works.
They
again.
Took the night off. They're union. They don't work after 9:10.
I seem to have lost sound on my computer, but that's okay.
You can get crazy about it
it's
after
silent.
The show.
No, and I can't play our closing sequence. Oh, there we go. Okay, there we go.
I hear there's room there
we go.
On the internet.
It works.
You ever seen a grown man naked?
And so, to all of you, a fond farewell.
Hooray, I'm helping.
You are a meathead.
Oh, Magoo, you've done it again.
That was so terrible, I think you gave me cancer.
As your eyes get bigger and bigger. All right, folks, that's our show, our 300th broadcast. We have been as much fun as we did. Talking a stick at stupid cancer.
We'd like to thank our guests tonight, Kiku Collins, David Gibson, and from the Peloton Project, Ramsey Tripp and Laura Davis, and vicariously to Patrick Dempsey. Next week's show, boxer Terry Moss. Join us for an exclusive interview with young adult survivor blogger Aaron Havel and WIBA-WIBF retired world champ Terry Moss, who through interferon treatment has learned to get busy living and inspire millions. Spotlight on Grant Besner, founder of Llama Mama. Subscribe to our show anytime for free on iHeartRadio Talk, iTunes Podcast, and Blog Talk Radio. Check us out anytime at stupidcancershow.org and stupidcancer.org. Remember, folks, it ain't stupid, it ain't cancer. Live from the chemo deck, on behalf of Annie Goodman, welcome back, Annie Goodman, Kenny Kane, Maureen Sweet, myself, and our whole team here at the Stupid Cancer Show. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you back here next Monday for episode 301. Good night, folks.
Thanks.